Thanks for listening to this message from the life of St. Bees. We're a church that loves to empower, equip and inspire. And in order to better fulfill this call, we're currently undertaking an audacious church relocation project. Find out more, including how you can take part, at www.goandgrow.london. Thank you, and may this message better help you to live a life full of adventurous faith.
The reading today is from Deuteronomy 26, verses 16 to 19, and if you're using a church Bible, it's on page 194. Follow the Lord's commands. The Lord your God commands you this day to follow these decrees and laws. Carefully observe them with your heart and with all your soul. You have declared this day that the Lord is your God, and that you will walk in obedience to him, that you will keep his decrees, commands, and laws, that you will listen to him. And the Lord has declared this day that you are his people, his treasured possession as he promised, and that you are to keep all his commands. He has declared that he will set you in praise, fame and honor high above all of the nations he has made, and that you will be a people holy to the Lord your God, as he promised.
Thank you, Siming. Well, it falls to me to sum up a long section of Deuteronomy, which is a kind of all the laws that we've been going through from chapters 4 to 26, and I'm specifically going to focus in on chapters 19 to 26, as if that is only a tiny bit. It's actually quite a big bit. Much of Western civilization, perhaps even the civilization of the entire world, is based on Deuteronomy. But when we read these ancient texts, we need to remember that Deuteronomy was largely compiled prior to the Greek and Roman civilizations. These were ancient peoples. They lived in what we would think of as quite barbaric times, where tribal kings exacted rough justice. And no one was talking about democracy, equality, human rights, care for minorities. None of that was on their agenda at all. It's not that there wasn't any civilization, but the civilization that was around was fairly brutal. So, for instance, we have the law of Hammurabi, the Amorite king of Babylon. This was written perhaps 300 years prior to Moses. And so we can compare and contrast the law of Hammurabi to the law of Moses. Under Hammurabi's law, which has lots of similarities to Deuteronomy, there was just one punishment for wrongdoing, and that was death. Slaves and women were not treated as people, they were treated as property. And different people were treated differently according to their rank, according to their social class. So there was law, there was a form of law and order, but it was very different from what we know. The nature of the laws were on a different basis. The philosophical undergirding of the law of Hammurabi is different to that of the law of Moses. Hammurabi's laws were casuistic. They were to do with consequences. If you do this, then you shall die. It's the law of consequence. Whereas Moses' laws mainly were apodictic. They were not based on a set of conditions or consequences. They were commands. You must do this because that is the right thing to do. In other words, the law of Moses was undergirded by a moral code. That there are some things that are right and that there are some things that are wrong. Moses' law is based on ethics. It's the law of conscience rather than the law of consequences. And this is really quite a revolutionary new idea had bringing an ethical framework to society. So let me go through some of the things that are in Moses' law from chapters 19 to chapters 26. And I've tried to classify them so that we can see the scope of what Moses introduced. The regulations encompassed justice. There was a moderation of vengeance. If somebody kills your relative, you don't automatically go and kill their whole family. It's moderated. There is the necessity for more than one witness at a trial. There is the decent treatment of prisoners, especially women. That was unheard of. There were legal punishments that were specified that they should not be degrading to the criminal. Extraordinary. Then there was the dignity of the individual. Conscripts to the army should be voluntary. That's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it? Conscripts should be voluntary. In other words, Moses prescribed that if you'd bought a house, don't go in the army, go and enjoy your new house. If you've married a wife, don't come in the army, go and enjoy your new wife. We shouldn't show preferment on how we treat our children. That's an interesting one. It's so embedded in our own kind of psyche that we treat our children all the same. It doesn't seem necessary that we should even mention it. And yet that was a new thing. You've probably heard the joke of the air steward safety announcement. In the event of the loss of pressure, masks will come hurtling down towards you. After you've stopped screaming, take the mask and put it on your face. If you are traveling with a child, please place the mask on their face to shut them up. If you are traveling with more than one child, please decide which child you love more, because you won't have time to put masks on both of them. Well, of course, it's ridiculous, isn't it? Because we just, love doesn't think like that, does it? We do not treat our children preferentially like that. It's an anathema to us. That was brought in by Moses. A decent burial, even for criminals, that criminals, even after their death, should be treated with some dignity. And then there was having a social conscience, that if you see your neighbor having trouble with their animal, that their animal has gone off, you should go and help them. The parable of the Good Samaritan that Jesus told, the passers-by in that parable, who passed by on the other side of the road, were in contravention of at least the spirit of the law of Deuteronomy 22. It's there that we should help each other out. Return of property, finders keepers, is overruled by Deuteronomy. We're meant to return what we find. And then there's the law of health and safety. Would you believe it? It's in there. This is an interesting one. We've actually only really caught up with Moses' law of health and safety in the last 20 or 30 years. It says, Deuteronomy 22, verse 8, when you build a house, a new house, make a parapet around your roof, so that you may not bring guilt of bloodshed on your house if someone falls from the roof. Amazingly, we are having to do exactly that up at Solar House. We're building a fence around the roof for health and safety purposes. We should not have needed to be told to do that. It's in the Bible. Social mores, decency about wearing appropriate dress. What is decent? What would cause offence? Domestic abuse, husbands ill-treating their wives, not just physically ill-treating them, but also defamation of character. Personal hygiene, domestic sanitation. And then there are the attitudes to the environment and to animals, caring for animals. We should be caring for them compassionately. Do not muzzle the ox while it is treading the grain. Deuteronomy 25, verse 4. Environmental concerns are in there as well. Then attitudes to others who are different from ourselves, particularly those who are relatively disadvantaged. Respect for other nations. Care for the refugee and the fugitive. Leaving a portion of your crop, which is the equivalent of your income, leaving a portion of your crop for the poor and the foreigner. I wonder how well we're doing at that. Do we keep a portion of our income for giving to the poor? Then honorable business practice. Paying back what you promised on time. Fulfilling your pledges, doing what you say you would do. Respecting property, including the respect for business property. I guess the modern equivalent of that might be what we call intellectual property. Do not take security for a debt so that your debtor's well-being and livelihood is put in jeopardy. It's something that he really cannot do without. I mean, loan sharks would not be tolerated by Moses. The kind of payday loan companies, the likes of Wonga, who prey on vulnerable people. Moses has ahead of time said we shouldn't be doing that. Paying even the poor proper wages. Moses would approve of the living wage. Being honest in your accounts. Honoring God with your money. Setting aside the first tenth for God. Colin's already made reference to that. That's in Deuteronomy 26. And then family relations. Parents should not be held responsible for the sins of their children and vice versa. Thank the Lord for that. Looking after your family, even your family by marriage, the in-laws. Sexual ethics, there's quite a lot on sexual ethics in Deuteronomy 22. And incest is banned there as well. Incredible, isn't it? Incredible laws that have had this ethical basis. Jesus and Moses are the most influential figures in human history, in my opinion. The ethical basis of laws that Moses introduced were centuries ahead of his time. The scope of the laws is incredible because God is interested in the whole of our lives. There is absolutely no divide between the sacred and the social and the secular. They're all encompassed in Moses' law. If your Christian discipleship is mainly to do with coming here on a Sunday, well, that's a good start. It is a good start. Well done. But it is only a start. Because God is interested in your work. He is interested in your midweek. He is interested in your honesty. He's interested in your sex life. He's interested in your money. He's interested in your family relations, in your prejudices, in your compassion for the poor. He's interested in what you do when nobody else is looking. He's interested in what you think about that nobody else knows. Your whole life, everything. God wants to be sovereign over your whole life. No exclusions. And he has a way for you to live the best way. He is your creator. He knows how you are made. And he has a way for you to live. Verse 16. The Lord your God commands you this day to follow these decrees and laws. Carefully observe them with all your heart and with all your soul. Now, this is a radically different way of thinking to the way that our culture is currently evolving. In our culture, there is no right way or wrong way to live. You must find your own way. But Moses' laws are based on the premise that God is king and he has the right to tell us how we should live. Today in our 21st century culture, no one has the right to tell anyone how they should live, not even God. The law of Moses, which was later developed on and elaborated by Jesus, opened the way for all sorts of things that we've come to take for granted. Democracy, human rights, care for minorities, equality, and even health and safety. Do not believe that these things came out of modern secular humanism. They didn't. They came straight from Moses and Jesus. Moses' law is based on ethics, the foundation that some things are right and some things are wrong, and that we have our consciences to help guide us through that right and wrong, and we have the law of Moses to inform our consciences. Whereas the prevailing culture of our day is find your own truth, find what is right for you. Our civilization is in danger of reverting to the law of Hammurabi, where the laws are simply based on consequences, not conscience. If you can get away with it, fine, but watch out for the consequences. I want to suggest that Moses invites us into a different way of life, to live counter to the prevailing culture. We don't live like other people. Take the way we spend our money. If I told my non-Christian friends how much money I gave away, they would look at me aghast and say, "How much?" They'd be incredulous. Or take our attitude to sex and marriage. Again, our non-Christian friends think we're bonkers. You know, sex with one woman and only within marriage for the whole of your life? Really? Or take our insistence on honesty, irrespective of the consequences, irrespective of who's watching. Perhaps in your tax return or your insurance claim. I remember one time I bought a purchase in a foreign country outside the EU, and quite a large purchase, and I brought it back into the UK. And I only realized afterwards that I should have gone through the something to declare route and paid import duty on this purchase. So I rang up Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, and I said that, you know, I'd inadvertently imported this thing, and I owed them some import duty, some money. The dear man I spoke to could not believe it. He had never encountered anyone ringing up offering to pay retrospectively. He did not have the cognitive framework to understand what I was saying to him. They had no system to deal with it. And he said, well, I suppose you can make us a payment, which is exactly what I did. Because we live differently to the world around us. Now, I am not saying that all non-Christians are immoral, dishonest, or miserly. Far from it. I know many wonderful people who intuitively follow the precepts of Moses, often better than many Christians do. But I am saying that Moses invites us to live counter to the prevailing culture in a society where increasingly anything goes. And as we respond to that invitation that Moses holds out before us, God declares over us, verse 18, that you are his people, his treasured possession, as he has promised, and that you are to keep all his commands. This whole sermon series is called His Treasured Possession, from Deuteronomy 26, verse 18. We are so precious to God. He made us. He loves us. It reminds me of a parable that Jesus told in Luke 15. Let me read it to you. Verse 8, Luke 15, verse 8. Suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me. I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. One of the things we rejoiced over yesterday was that we had a prayer area where people could go and be prayed for in the side chapel. There's lots of crafts going on here at the tree lighting and prayer going on in the side chapel. And one person came and gave their heart to the Lord Jesus for the first time yesterday, rejoicing in heaven. Isn't that wonderful? So, this woman with the 10 coins, and she loses one. They're 10 drachma, or in Latin, denarius. A coin was worth about a day's wages. So, they were of significant value. And the inscription on these coins was the image of the king. The coins may have been small, but they were of great value and great significance. We are made in the image of the King. We are of great value and great significance. These small silver coins were worn by women as part of a sort of ornamental headpiece round the forehead. They were, in other words, not just of value, not just with the king's image on them, but they were also this woman's treasured possession, like we are God's treasured possession. And so it's not surprising that this woman in Jesus' parable went on a crazed cleaning spree. She was desperate to find her coin. She'd only lost one, but she was desperate to find it because for her, it was her treasured possession. It bore the image of the king. And when she finds it, she throws a massive neighborhood party because she's so thrilled to get that precious thing back again. And that's what God thinks about us. Back to Deuteronomy. This passage that Siming read to us is like a summary passage of the previous seven chapters, perhaps even the previous 22 chapters. So how does Moses sum it all up? Well, first, the Lord commands us. He commands us to obey and to listen. To obey him and to listen to him. In other words, to follow him. Now, that won't always be comfortable. It involves our whole lives. Perhaps there are things in our lives that we would like to remain in charge of. We don't really want to hand over control to God. But that's the deal. We are called to obey and listen to him, to follow him in everything, in our whole lives. And then there follows three promises, one made by us and two made by God. The one made by us, we declare that the Lord, he is the Lord our God. That he is the Lord our God. He is our King. Now, this promise is, if you like, the exact counterpart to the promise, the command of God to obey. God says, you obey me, and we say, yes, we will. You are our God. We're agreeing to his command. We have the choice. We have the choice to follow him or not to follow him. But we say, yes, we're making that choice. You are our God. And what a good choice it turns out to be. Because no sooner than we've made that choice, than the Lord declares, first, that we are his treasured possession. We are precious to the Lord, that we have found our true place in the world, in life, in existence. This is what we were made for, to be God's treasured possession. But it doesn't stop there. The Lord makes a second declaration. He declares that we are to be a people holy to the Lord. Holy to the Lord. Wow. What a promise that we are going to be a holy people. It doesn't seem possible, does it? But that's what God promised, and so he will bring it about. You know, as we move church next year, move up onto the high road into Solar House, there is a danger that we might start to blend in to the society around us. After all, we will no longer be meeting in an overtly religious building. It won't look like a church. A Solar House will look like, well, it will look like an office block because that's what it currently is. And yet, from its very genesis, this project has been about not blending in, but about shining out. I put this picture of a beacon up because that was a prophetic word for us right from the inception of this project, that we would become a beacon for the kingdom of God. Living counter to the prevailing culture that is around us. Knowing that we are God's treasured possession, and also knowing that ultimately he will cause us to become a people holy to the Lord. What amazing promises that God makes us.